The Provoke Podcast, brought to you by Provoke Media and produced by the international broadcast specialist, Marketeers.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to what is, in terms of recording at least, Provoke Media's first podcast of 2022. I'm delighted to be here with Jim O'Leary, who's the US COO and US corporate chair at Edelman. Last year, and some of you will have seen this, Edelman did some really interesting research into the future of the corporate communications role. We're going to be touching on that, but I actually wanted to start by touching on the future of the CEO role. And obviously, as the chair of a corporate practice, you get to see what issues CEOs are spending most of their time on. My impression is that the average CEO is spending more and more time dealing with stakeholder issues, whether that's employees, consumers, investors, regulators, whoever. Communication is, it seems to me, a bigger part of the CEO's job today than it ever was in the past. I'm wondering if you have sort of any idea how much time the average CEO spends on these issues, and also what the sort of average comfort level is, because this is not necessarily a part of the job that you learn until you arrive in the corner office. It's not necessarily something that you've had to do as an engineer or as a finance director or whatever your background was before you got to be the leader of the corporation.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to have this discussion today. You've raised a couple really good points, and maybe I'll take them one by one and as we talk through this. First, I totally agree with your statement about the changing nature of the role of the CEO and the role of communications in relation to that. I would say that you could contend, I certainly would, that the job of today's CEO is largely incomparable to CEOs in previous generations. And so there are many things that today's CEOs do that CEOs in the past did and are largely unchanged. But, you know, look no further than what's going on in the world today. Look at workforce tensions, look at the pandemic, look at increasing expectations for companies to engage on, you know, any number of social issues, racial issues, geopolitical issues, right? So the role of the CEO is certainly more complex than it's been. And as a result of that, and many people have seen this data, there's more CEO, high-profile CE exits than there's been in the past. And over the past several years, if not even a little bit longer, the topple rate of CEOs is continuing to rise as CEOs leave or are forced out in the wake of many of these challenges. Some CEOs are clearly more comfortable and invest more time in parts of the role than others. And well, I can't tell you for certain, you know, what the average amount of time a CEO spends, you know, on, you know, navigating any number of these difficult issues or, you know, communications even more specifically. I will say that, you know, we have seen that CEOs are spending much more time on this than they have in the past, and that the comfort level of the CEO, it matters less than it used to. Because in the past, I think there was, you know, some CEOs had the ability to largely fly underneath the radar. And so if they were less comfortable, they could be less visible or active or present. I think that that's changed, and that the expectations of a CEO to play a leadership role on any number of things have, you know, forced some CEOs out of their comfort zone, which is for many employees within a company, an increased expectation, and certainly from a number of external stakeholders as well. And so the good thing, though, I think for our profession, particularly on the corporate communication side, right, is that, you know, now that CEOs are increasingly dependent on their communications leaders, this presents an opportunity for communications to make a more material impact than we perhaps ever have.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I think there have always been those CEOs who enjoyed this part of the job, whether it came naturally or they grew into it. You know, I mean, we can all, I think back over the years that we've been doing this to the Richard Bransons and the Lee Iacocca's and, dare I say it, the Donald Trumps of the world, who clearly relished the spotlight on their CEOs. But equally, it used to be an optional part of the job. It seems to me that that's no longer the case. And I'm wondering, you know, what you do as a corporate communicator if you find yourself working with a CEO who is reluctant to do this, and maybe not very good at it. Do you have an option to find an alternate to the CEO, or is this absolutely 100% necessarily part of the job now?
I think this is absolutely part of the job now. I will say you're right in that, you know, historically some CEOs would focus on the business of the business, running the business, ensuring, you know, that they had the right strategy given where marketplace trends were going, and, you know, focused on managing those along with the financials and maybe the board and prioritize a number of other things. I do feel like all CEOs now, certainly at publicly traded companies, you know, they need to do those things, but then they increasingly will need to focus on, you know, the intersection of what their businesses do and policy. Some CEOs will even go into, you know, further and go into the politics side of it. Certainly, CEOs are increasingly unable to avoid questions around the role that their companies or businesses, you know, play or should play in society or on social issues. When you look at their workforces and what's happening in the workplace, I think, you know, most CEOs that I've been speaking to recently, you know, and some will even say this publicly, like Dan Schulman at PayPal, you know, they think about their employees as the first and foremost highest priority audience, even higher than shareholders. And so I do think that this is an area where CEOs have to do more than they have in the past. And many, if not most, are. But in the instances where, you know, the CEOs are less comfortable, it's not like the rest of the C-suite doesn't have a role to play. I think the rest of the C-suite and you know, leaders across these companies, you know, can help shoulder the burden, certainly, so that, you know, not everyone has to be out front and center as much as Mark Benioff, for example, though some certainly can and do.
To what extent have companies, I should backtrack a second and say, I see this pretty much unequivocally as a positive trend, as I suspect anybody who's read my stuff or listened to our podcast knows. I think the more engaged business is with the society in which it operates, the better off we all are, including at the end of the day, corporations. But I can certainly understand that there are CEOs who see this partially, at least, as a distraction from their day-to-day business of making money for their shareholders. But to what extent have those CEOs and CEOs in American corporations in particular brought this on themselves by emphasizing things like purpose, by issuing statements about governance and the purpose of the corporation? I'm thinking of the Business Roundtable a couple of years ago, that sort of, you know, opened them up to scrutiny and questioning on social and political issues. To what extent is it just a reaction to the fact that that scrutiny was intensifying anyway?
I think that the scrutiny was absolutely intensifying anyway, right? And so when the BRT came out and said that we're, you know, shifting from a shareholder world to a stakeholder world. I think that the trends prior to that were indicating that, and it was, you know, similar to Larry Fink, you know, in his annual letter coming out. I believe that those were indicators of a shift that was already occurring. And, you know, I do think that when you look at where all of this is headed, there will always be some CEOs, perhaps many, that see many much of this as a distraction. But that doesn't mean or take away from the fact that it is increasingly now part of their job, whether they like it or not.
So that being the case, how does that change the corporate communications advisor's job? And I ask that partly in skepticism that the advisory role of the CCO has historically been undervalued, while the ability to translate corporate speak into regular speak has been overvalued. In other words, I do think that in the past, the CCO's job has been more about taking the CEO and other leaders' thoughts and translating them into a language that makes sense to stakeholders, and less about advising on policy. Is that changing? Is that evolving?
That's an interesting observation. And I think, you know, much of it is situational. I mean, there are certainly heads of corporate affairs who have been advising CEOs on policy for a long time. That said, I do think the events of the past 24 months, give or take, exacerbated or accelerated a trend that was already favorable to communications. Now, not everybody is able to do what you're talking about, Paul, which is, you know, advise a CEO on any number of complex issues. But those that can have certainly been able to, you know, elevate the importance that they play in the companies they work for and the functions that support them in doing so. And so I do ultimately see this as an opportunity for communications. At the same time, I do think that there's some merit to what you were saying about historical perceptions of the function and its leadership and the role that that they should or that they were playing.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting on the political and social front in particular is just the whole process that goes into deciding, you know, which issues to engage with, which issues to, if not ignore, at least relegate to a more passive role in the organization. And then deciding, you know, if you're going to engage on the side of this is why we're making a big change here, this is why not. I'm interested, for example, I'm not articulating it very well, so let me give you a concrete example. Corporations were very quick to get off the sidelines 18 months ago on the Black Lives Matter issue, which honestly surprised and impressed me. And I thought corporate leadership at that time around issues related to diversity and inclusion was really impressive. Last year, far fewer corporations, far fewer CEOs were willing to get involved in the debate around abortion and access to abortion in places like Texas. Now, there's certainly a case to be made that women's issues should be as important as Black and other diversity issues. So how do you see companies, and I'm not asking you to weigh in on the rights and wrongs of any of this necessarily, just on the process that companies go through to decide which issues their leaders are going to speak out on and which they're going to stay quiet on?
Paul, as you pointed out, one of the most important parts of all of this is having, you know, either some type of framework or thoughtful way to determine which issues, you know, a CEO or an organization should speak out or not speak out on, or take action on or not take action on. And I think in the earliest days, many people were approaching this in an ad hoc way, where an issue would arise and a group of people would get together and determine the company's position and then, you know, communicate it externally. I think since then, you know, certainly many of the many leading companies have created very thoughtful, very intentional frameworks through which all of the issues can be filtered to determine which ones the company should take a position on, which ones the company should take action on. And, you know, ultimately, the answer is going to be different for every company, and it's going to be dependent on the company and its employees and, you know, its purpose, also its leadership. But all of those variables can be factored into the framework. And, you know, increasingly, we are seeing in companies and leaders develop systems through which to evaluate, you know, which issues to address and which to not. And I think that without that, it makes it very difficult, not just to be a head of communications, but, you know, to be a CEO, you know, trying to determine what to do around all of the issues of the day.
Yeah, I've always thought that that sort of corporate values were helpful in this context. But as the issues that corporations are dealing with get more and more complex and more multifaceted and more nuanced, where there isn't necessarily a clear guidance in the values, where it's not as black and white as, you know, we believe in diversity or, you know, we want to protect the environment. It's clear that a more complicated and structured framework is necessary. Is corporate communications in a position to provide that, do you think?
I find that corporate communications certainly is in a position to help create that, along with, you know, any number of other partners across the C-suite, typically, you know, some combination of communications, HR, legal, sustainability or social impact, ESG, as well as, you know, contributions from the board itself. But, you know, it's certainly not, in my experience, it doesn't typically fall exclusively to communications, but I think communications certainly plays an important role in that.
You mentioned earlier that you were seeing CEOs now who had sort of elevated employees to the front rank of stakeholders in some cases, even thinking about the employee implications of a decision before the shareholder implications. I guess my experience with business leaders would make me a little skeptical about that. But at the same time, the events of last year, whether you believe the Great Resignation was a one-off event or even, you know, believe that it was real because there's conflicting data now, it did become apparent last year that people were much more willing to consider their options, think about moving on, choose employees based on whether there was an alignment of values. Do you expect that to continue? Do you expect that to become more pronounced? What's the trend in terms of the need to manage your reputation internally with your own employees?
I think of it as the Great Reset, and it is certainly very real, as you pointed out. Great Resignation, you know, set aside for a minute. And so a Great Reset has occurred. It is occurring right now. And certainly the majority of the CEOs that I talk to are very focused on the workforce and the workplace, largely due to reasons that you would expect: performance of the business, and ultimately frankly, the benefit to the shareholders, right? So these things are not disconnected or divorced from each other. So I do think in the world we are in now, that is, you know, in part defined by the Great Reset, that there is increased CEO and executive focus on the workforce. I also think that as CEOs have navigated, you know, first the pandemic, then, you know, the employee, call it employee discussion or activism in some instances around many of the issues that we've all seen. I think that we've seen, you know, an increased willingness for employees to speak out against even, you know, their own executives publicly, whether it's the tech companies or, you know, what's happening at Activision Blizzard. And so CEOs are certainly mindful of all of that too. And anyone who thinks that, you know, the days of being able to largely ignore the workforce, which, you know, certainly many CEOs did not do, but I think you could argue there were some that deprioritized, you know, that piece of the role. I think that that's going to be increasingly impossible to do if that's the way that a CEO wanted to do it.
Yeah, I certainly think that there was a largely unspoken agreement among business leaders that new employees were easier to find than new shareholders. And I'm not sure that's necessarily the case anymore. I think a lot of that has to be driven by the pace of change that we're seeing in business now, that whether it's sort of restructuring your operations, whether it's, you know, transforming the culture, whether it's mergers and acquisitions, you know, change management used to be a thing that you got called in for on a project basis. Today, it's an everyday part of the job, right? And that has to change both the CEO and the CCO's perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like most companies are in a near permanent state of transformation right now. So, you know, whether it's portfolio transformation, digital transformation, or as you mentioned, you know, culture transformation, data from the management consulting firms suggests that, you know, 9 out of 10 companies are in some form of transformation right now, and that, you know, the lion's share of those are failing. And absolutely, communications can play a role in help enabling the success of companies that are going through change or transformation. The data shows it. The fact that some CCOs are actually now shifting into chief transformation officer roles is evidence of it. And so I do think this is one area where, along with some of the historical areas that CEOs valued most, this is increasingly an area where CEOs value the role that communications plays very much.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is, you know, both anecdotal evidence and, you know, some data-driven information that I've seen all suggests that when transformation fails, it is more often than not because communication and persuasion failed. And I don't think it's any coincidence that that's an area that the people who traditionally manage transformation, I'm looking at you, management consultants, are not necessarily good at or don't necessarily prioritize, that it's all very well coming up with, you know, a new structure and a new management, you know, org chart and all of that. But if you can't persuade people that the change is good for them and is meaningful to them, then it won't work. And that, it seems to me, is an area where both corporate communications people and indeed corporate PR agencies have a much bigger role to play than they've traditionally been granted.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Paul. So, you know, the management, many management consultants, they, in the context of the transformation work that they are doing, they are often focused on and overlook some key things. They are focused on strategy. They're focused on, you know, process and project management, and they typically overlook the human element, the people element. And that's often why transformations fail, because they're, you know, they fail to get employee or stakeholder buy-in into the transformation itself and the vision of that transformation. For us, you know, our transformation business right now is one of the fastest growing, you know, parts of our company. And it has been now for, you know, for several years. And it's driven largely by an increased recognition among many of our C-suite, you know, clients, particularly CEOs, heads of business units, or chief transformation officers, that there is a very important role that communications plays in enabling communication, in enabling successful transformation, and that many of the traditional, you know, providers of transformation consulting services, they just fall short of delivering on that piece of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I want to pick up on the phrase you used there about the human element, because I think that that is a, that's a thread that unites a lot of the things that we're talking about right now. It's about, you know, employees and transformation, yes, but it's also about the societal issues that companies are being asked to engage with. It's also about the sort of ESG commitments that companies are being asked to make. All of this is about the fact that that stakeholders around the world, and actually I should even drop the word stakeholders and just say what I mean, which is people, right? Human beings, yep, around the world are suddenly armed with more information about your behavior as an organization, your policies and practices, than they've ever had before. In some cases, with more misinformation about your organization than they've ever had before. And they feel empowered to make decisions about whether they want to do business with your organization, whether that's joining as an employee, welcoming you into their community, buying your products, or owning your shares. And so all of the management of those human elements is just a much bigger deal for CEOs and therefore for CCOs than it was even 5 years ago.
I think it's absolutely right, Paul. I feel like you're now heading towards a Paul Holmes thought piece on, you know, the rise of the human element, and you can do it in a way that is, you know, counterintuitive when everyone thought it was going to be the rise of the robots or something. I'm sure we're going to be seeing this in your, you know, public, in your writings in the near future.
Well, I mean, one of the great things about a conversation like this is that it probably throws up three or four additional ideas for either new conversations or new think pieces. But, you know, I do think that this human relations, you know, I feel like we lost sight as an industry of what the words public relations mean. Mm-hmm. And when you start to talk to somebody about why it's important to have relationships with people, they think of that as completely different than they think of the words public relations. At the end of the day, that's what the business is, right? It's about creating a relationship between your organization and all the human beings out there who depend on it or interact with it, or, you know, in some cases, affected by it.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right in that, you know, in given what's going on in the world right now, you just can't undervalue the human element. Right. And I do think that there were some organizations that did devalue or deprioritize the human element. And, you know, over the past 18, 24 months, that's probably been revealed that there was a cost associated with that, a negative cost.
So how much of that devaluation of the human element is a result of the fact that we have never really been able to show in financial bottom line terms what the consequences of mismanaging the human element are. I mean, we see it, we see examples of it when it's done really badly. So, you know, you only need to look at what's gone on at in the leadership ranks of Wells Fargo or over the last 2 years to see that consistent crisis can be hugely costly to organizational leaders, CEOs, and organizations themselves. But I don't know that we're necessarily very good still at showing a CEO what the cost of mishandling human relations can be.
This is a really interesting question. So, you know, I don't know if you could quantify or even, you know, qualitatively evaluate what, you know, if devaluing the human element somehow adversely affected our profession. What I will say, like looking at it from the other side, is that what is possible now in terms of demonstrating, you know, like quantifiable business impact coming out of the communications team, which was very difficult to achieve until quite recently. But now that that's possible, it has enormous consequences for communications and the perception of communications within those organizations. And so, like, to be more specific, I have seen things, and we have done things for our clients in the past year, linking the work that we do to business impact in a way that, you know, prior to some of the more recent developments on the data modeling front, just I hadn't seen communications teams being able to do. And as a result of them doing it, whether it's, you know, linking the work more directly to, you know, the communications team's contribution to market share or market cap, any number of factors, when communications teams do that and they have that hard data to take up, you know, to the leadership of the organization, it always increases the amount of value that, or the perception of that team and its function on its ability to impact the business. That certainly is a positive shift that I've seen.
I'm seeing it too. I wish it was happening faster, and I also wish I was smart enough to understand it better than I do, because once you get into data and analytics, like a lot of sort of people whose background is in liberal arts and journalism, I begin to flounder a little bit. But
There's no question that we're just scratching the surface of what's possible here, and that many in our profession are struggling with it. And, you know, for every, for every company that has a communications analytics operation or a comms tech operation, and there are some quite impressive ones that I've seen recently, but for everyone, you know, for every Fortune 500 company that has that, there are 10 or maybe even 100 that don't. And so I think we still have a long way to go as a profession here.
But it's interesting. I mean, I look at a societal level, for example, you know, you look at something like the COVID pandemic, and you know, I've seen business groups come forward and say this is the cost in productivity of the lockdown and of remote working. And what I haven't seen is anybody say this is the cost in human lives of the lack of trust that we see in institutions, right? And trust is our business. I mean, it's another thread that's running through this whole conversation. Is mm-hmm. any benefit when consumers, shareholders, employees, activists trust us? And there can't be any question, right, that as a society, we've lost not only thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives, but billions of dollars, because people don't trust information about vaccines, don't trust information about wearing masks, don't generally trust anything that's coming out of the CDC or the FDA. And, you know, our inability to put a dollar amount on what lack of trust is costing us has a real societal cost. I know you have your trust barometer coming out in a couple of weeks, which the entire industry now waits on with bated breath. I think it's fair to say. But you know, I'd love to see at some point us as an industry, Edelman as a leader, try and figure out what the cost of losing a percentage point of trust is, because I'm sure it's far higher than most business leaders realize.
And yeah, absolutely. So this, Paul, is a discussion that we should have in detail in the coming months. And in the meantime, I will say that what you just hit on, actually, including some of the specific examples you used, is it's like some of the main results of this year's trust barometer, which I, you know, can give you a couple quick previews on. First is that what you just said, like in today's world, there's this, as Richard would call it, like a vicious cycle, right, of distrust. And yeah, it's largely fueled by lack of faith in two institutions right now. And it's the two that you gave specific examples of, media and government, right? And it's these two institutions that are feeding the cycle of, I don't know, division, disinformation, like, you know, political trickiness. And what the data also reveals is that as a result of that, you know, there's a disproportionate amount of responsibility that's now, you know, being placed on business and companies. This is pretty much, you know, I think fairly along the lines of what Mark Benioff has been saying. And, you know, even with, there was some Davos commentary coming out related to it. That, I guess, is just one more data point reinforcing what we talked about earlier, which is that, like, the responsibility or the amount of expectation that's being placed on CEOs, because they're the ones who are running these businesses, has never been greater.
Yeah. It was interesting and telling to me that at the beginning of the crisis, we saw lots of surveys, including your own, that showed that, you know, confidence in your own CEO or your own management team was way higher than confidence in any of the institutions that we would traditionally have trusted to give us this kind of information. That's sort of encouraging and terrifying in equal parts. I mean, it's encouraging that companies are trusted by so many of their employees. It's very worrying that government, academia, professional experts are so mistrusted. But it seems to me that sort of provides us with both an interesting way to wrap up this conversation and a great starting point for our next conversation. I'd love to have you back in a few weeks to talk about, you know, that trust issue and what it's costing us and how we go about repairing it. I'm not sure that we're necessarily going to answer that question in a 45-minute discussion, but I'm sure we can touch on some of the challenges.
It'll certainly be an interesting 45-minute discussion, Paul, and I would be delighted to come back for it. I guess, you know, I'll leave you with one more thing related to trust, and because I do think it'll, you know, put a nice little exclamation point on what you were just saying. The data that our new trust data and the role of government and trust in government, it's quite remarkable. So I think it was as recent as like May of 2020 that when the pandemic was in its earlier stages, right, government was actually the most trusted. And the fall in that trust was swift and severe. I think it went, you know, down like double digits. And that despite that, like, people actually still do expect government to lead, right, on major societal issues. But like less than half the people that we talk to in the trust barometer research think that government's actually doing so. So, you know, when we talk next, we could probably have a quite, you know, robust discussion around that piece alone. And then certainly we can get into, and this is where, of course, you know, I always get quite excited, but the specific implications for CEOs and for businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's my interest largely as well, though, obviously, you know, the government stuff is interesting. So I look forward to another conversation when the time is right and we've had a chance to look at the research. In the meantime, thank you so much for the conversation today. This is clearly a challenging time to be both a CEO and a CCO. never, I suspect, have they needed each other more. And that's got to be good news for our profession. So exciting times. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thanks for having me on the show, Paul. I couldn't agree more. The more challenging it is to be a CEO in today's world, at least, probably actually means the more opportunity there is to be a meaningful CCO. So we'll leave it on a positive note there.
You've been listening to the Provoke podcast, brought to you by Provoke Media and produced by the international broadcast specialist, Marketeers.